Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description. Hey, everybody. Happy Friday. Thanks for joining. I think I'm just going to start straight up with a little bit of a different ask. I know it's always blah, blah, blah. Listen to the first 8 episodes. Join me on Patreon, all those things. Today's ask is share this episode. Share it with someone who you think might be interested in it. Because while you may have friends or family who are not ready to learn about collapse in general, more and more people are becoming interested in and concerned about politics, especially in the United States. And this could be a great segue for them to learn a little bit about the content and ease into the topic. All right. Well, with that, let's dive in to the 20 different articles and sources that I have today discussing the ways in which Donald Trump and the Trump administration is subverting the law and descending the United States into fascism. Once again this week, Donald Trump referred to the fact that he is able to and likely going to invoke the Insurrection Act. He said, quote, "Don't forget, I can use the Insurrection Act. 50% of the presidents almost have used that. And that's unquestioned power. I choose not to. These cities have to be safe." He is just itching to do it. And it seems that the reason he is not up to this point is because he's continuing to get away with simply not listening to judges' orders. It seems like the plan is that he'll continue to ignore what judges are saying or do whatever he can to get around it. And the moment in which he's no longer able to do that, he will invoke the Insurrection Act, as that will likely buy him that much more time from the courts and give him what he feels is expanded powers. And this, just a reminder to you that Donald Trump himself was charged with stirring up an insurrection at the Capitol, where gallows were erected with threats to murder the Vice President of the United States, because he did not engage in that insurrection as well. Every accusation is a confession. In the same statement, talking about this unquestioned power that he believes he's going to have, again, referring back incidentally to the plenary authority that we talked about last week, he also said that he was going to be deploying the National Guard to San Francisco next. And San Francisco now is gearing up for an influx of ICE agents as well as the National Guard. An article in CBS News talks about how a judge tells Homeland Security that Chicago agents wearing body cameras is not a suggestion. They are ordering them to wear body cameras and have them turned on. This was an issue ordered last Thursday, and she said, quote, "Maybe I wasn't clear yesterday. That wasn't suggestion. I am modifying the temporary restraining order to include body-worn cameras. It's not up for debate. It wasn't a hint. It wasn't a topic of discussion or conversation. It was an order. So I will enter it today, and then I will expect that it will be followed." That's strong language, and we will see if Donald Trump and ICE agents heed it, though the most likely is that this will be yet another unenforceable or at least unenforced order. We'll talk a little more in a bit about the unenforcement of these orders against Donald Trump. But first, perhaps we should mention that immigrants with no criminal record are now the largest group in ICE detention, according to The Guardian. Government data shows that 16,523 people with no record versus 15,725 with a record and 13,767 with pending charges. Folks, I have people in my life, important people in my life, who are saying what ICE is doing is good, it is right, they are defending it because Donald Trump said they were only going after the worst. They were getting rid of the murderers, the thieves, the rapists. Those are the immigrants that we are deporting. But the data that I just read shows that no, indeed, more people do not have any record than those that do, and there's a similar number that have pending charges. ICE is not detaining those who are most violent. He is detaining anyone that is either here undocumented, and in many cases, those who are citizens of the United States, which we will get to more in a moment as well. And all of this, not to mention, without going into detail about what those 15,725 with records are. What are those records? Is it possession? Is it a traffic ticket? I am willing to bet, and I will need to do some more research on this, but that the vast majority of those are folks with minor infractions. Certainly not all murderers, rapists, or convicted of other violent crimes. Following up on that, how about this article? Officials scrub data showing U.S. citizens swept up in immigration arrests. There was an immigration crackdown dashboard, which at one time reportedly showed that 21 U.S. citizens were arrested, until a local paper started asking questions, and it was quickly removed and swept under the rug. Why is ICE arresting citizens? Why is it detaining them? And is this a situation that is only going to continue and even worsen? How about those No Kings protests over the weekend? Republican Governor Abbott orders National Guard deployed to No Kings protest. There was all sorts of rhetoric in the week leading up to the protest saying that it was going to be only the worst of the Democrat leftists. It's going to be the supporters of Hamas. It's going to be the Marxists. It's going to be the terrorists. It's going to be blah, blah, blah. There was a funny moment on the Daily Show with Jon Stewart where he is contrasting the language beforehand on Fox News, the rhetoric leading up to the protests, and then the discussion afterwards, which was that the news anchors were mocking the protests and the protesters for being so mild and boring, for being geriatric, for being silly, for dressing up in animal costumes, and how unserious the whole thing was. And Jon says, well, which is it? Are these protests full of terrorists and evil Marxists, Antifa, who is going to destroy the nation? Or is it people out in animal costumes, peacefully holding signs, using their right to free speech to declare we don't have kings in America? And look, there's a fierce debate about the effectiveness of these protests. On the one hand, there were 7 million people there. It was one of the largest ever one-day protests in the history of the United States. On the other hand, there's criticism that there's a lack of demands, there's a lack of effectiveness in actually driving any change. My opinion, personally, I think everything has its place. I attended my local protest here in town. I live in a small, very red part of the country, and there were thousands of people that joined the protest. For me personally, it was great to see that here in a place like this, I'm not alone, that there are many other people who feel the same way. For every person at the protest, there was probably another two or three that honked and waved and cheered in support as they drove by. So I think for people who feel alone, it does provide a sort of networking opportunity, a chance to get out there and see. I saw people that I knew from town, from school, from other associations who I may not have expected to see there. And to be able to see a declaration of where they stand politically was powerful. It allowed me to know other people now that I can reach out to and build community or relationships with. Do I think that it's effective toward, you know, is it going to make any changes in the short term from a policy standpoint? No. I do think we need something more severe, a general strike. It might require something like civil disobedience at this point. It may go beyond that. Not saying what I think will happen or should happen, but I can also agree with and side with the sort of criticisms about the effectiveness of the protests as a whole towards making change. What is encouraging is that that many people showed up, and that if from here we can sort of hone in on the asks, on the demands, and on the methods for requiring them, on the methods for showing the power that we have to demand them, I think with time they can become more effective, and that's my hope. All right, moving into some of the corruption that's happening in the administration right now. Last week, conservative justice Amy Coney Barrett admits that the Supreme Court, quote, lacks the power, end quote, to stop Trump from defying them. She was not saying that they didn't have the power to rule against him, but that they lack the power to actually stop him from just doing what he wants to do. They can say, Mr. Trump, no, you cannot do X, Y, or Z. And she's saying, but we can't tell him or force him to listen to us. The buck stops at the Supreme Court. If he can get away with defying the Supreme Court, then there is nothing from a legal perspective that will stop him. At that point, the only remaining sort of question is how the physical enforcing class reacts, the military, the police. The Supreme Court should absolutely rule against Donald Trump where appropriate, so that those enforcers who have dedicated their lives and careers to protecting the Constitution have to make that choice. Now, of course, this would be one thing, one conversation to have if the Supreme Court showed that they were going to stand up to Donald Trump, but they have not done that in large part. And most indications point to them continuing to sort of acquiesce to his desires for more power. Donald Trump is demonstrating his supposed power and authority by tearing down the East Wing of the White House this week. He had previously declared that he would not be touching any of the existing structure, So what a surprise it was when all of a sudden we see first the facade coming down of the East Wing, and all of the defenders on X were saying, oh, well, he's only tearing down the facade. It's just the entrance. And then all of a sudden, now half the East Wing is gone. And he has openly said now the whole thing has to go. And what about that $300 million? His defenders once again will say, well, that is not taxpayer money. It's all privately funded. Donald Trump has set up a charity in which people are supposedly donating. Well, guess what? Surprise, surprise. Donald Trump has announced that he has final say on paying himself $230 million for past investigations of him by the DOJ. If you haven't heard of this story, basically he has said that because the Department of Justice looked into him previously after January 6th, that he is entitled to pay himself back reparations essentially from the DOJ. And he claims that he has the authority to simply demand it and to take it out. Now, don't worry, he says, I don't need this money. I'm not going to pay myself. I'm going to put it into a charity. And of course, the first thought on everyone's mind should be, well, of course, it is a charity that is funneling money right into his ballroom. Now, while that has not been openly declared, it seems glaringly obvious that he can simply funnel that money right from the taxpayers through the Department of Justice into his charity, and voila, he has himself a magnificent $300 million monstrosity of a ballroom attached to the White House. Bernie Sanders, tweeting out about Trump's wealth gain during his presidency, said, this is what kleptocracy looks like. In 2025, Donald Trump has received $3 billion, mostly from crypto. And as a side note, mostly from crypto scams, pump and dumps, and other grifting schemes. $940 million from law firms, a $400 million plane from Qatar, or Qatar, I go back and forth on how to pronounce that, $36 million from CBS, $25 million from Meta, $24 million from YouTube, $16 million from ABC, $10 million from X, and now this $230 million from the Department of Justice. But don't worry, folks, he is so benevolent. He donates his $400,000 a year salary. He must be the most benevolent, charitable president we've ever had, at least according to him. Meanwhile, Kristi Noem approves spending $200 million to buy jets during the shutdown. This is a Bloomberg government article. She is buying $200 million of jets for herself and her staff. And these aren't just any jets. They are, of course, luxury jets. Because why not? During a now nearly month-long government shutdown, a government shutdown in which SNAP benefits are being denied in the month of November, there will be no SNAP benefits in the month of November, which is the food stamps, if you're unfamiliar with it. We can't feed the poor and hungry, but we can spend $200 million on airplanes. Regarding the shutdowns, Trump said this, quote, Democrats didn't realize the shutdown gives me the right to cut federal programs Republicans never wanted. And he has gone off talking about many different programs he intends to potentially cut. And he has said, essentially, this is going to be the Democrats' fault. They are in control of whether or not this shutdown continues. He's talked about cutting the IRS. He's talked about cutting NASA. He has talked about cutting Social Security and Medicare. And when he does it, and when he makes his own people worse off, more poor, impoverished, hungry, sick, he will neatly point to the fact that I told you that this was the Democrats' fault that this was going to happen. And many of these programs were problematic from the beginning. Trump seems to believe, or at least he claims to believe, that the shutdown gives him more authority and power to cut programs, to ignore orders, to not pay federal workers, etc., etc., when it's simply not true. He does not have the power to simply shut down programs without congressional authority. And yet, he will do it anyway. Last week, we talked about how the Pentagon basically required the press to sign a document stating that they would only report on things that they gave the Pentagon gave them permission to, that they would not dig into anything that they shouldn't, in a sort of power move to remove all sorts of transparency from Pentagon actions. Well, most rejected that. And just this last week now, a couple days ago, the Pentagon announces, quote, next generation of press corps. The Defense Department said that dozens of new reporters had agreed to sign the Pentagon's rules, which have been rejected by many major news organizations. Essentially, they have created a propaganda news network of people willing to parrot exactly and only what the Pentagon wants them to talk about in regards to the goings on there. It says the announcement posted on X by Sean Parnell The chief Defense Department spokesman did not name the journalists or outlets, but numerous right-wing, pro-Trump online outlets said that they were among those that had agreed to the rules, including The Gateway Pundit, Human Events, Lindell TV, if you're familiar with Lindell, he's the pillow guy, Frontlines, an arm of Turning Point USA, and The National Pulse. So essentially, any news that we'll be receiving from the Pentagon will be state-sponsored propaganda through ultra-right-wing news organizations. Also, last week, we talked about the potential for John Bolton to be indicted by Trump. We knew it was coming. However, I didn't realize how soon. It was just hours after I had recorded that episode. And by the time you heard the episode on Friday, it had likely already happened. After he was indicted, Trump said, "Oh, I did not know that. He's a bad guy. Too bad. That's the way it goes." And so while Trump continues to go after and arrest his opponents, he's also pardoning those who had previously been arrested, such as George Santos, who he commutes the prison sentence of this week. I'm not going to go into George Santos and his story. I will quote or link an article in the description for you to read through if you're not familiar with all that fiasco. But no doubt this will further embolden followers of Trump to commit acts that, though they might get in trouble with the law, knowing that Donald Trump is actively commuting the sentences of his followers. A whistleblower with the DOJ named Erez Ruveni, I may be pronouncing that wrong, said he was fired after refusing to sign a brief that called Abrego Garcia, Kilmar Abrego Garcia, a terrorist. After being fired, he filed a whistleblower complaint and did an interview recently with CBS News to discuss it. Now, look, many are criticizing this, on one hand saying that the CBS Barry Weiss ownership essentially has bent the knee to Donald Trump, and so to take any reporting with a grain of salt. Also, there's the fact that this whistleblower was on his way up inside of the Trump administration, inside of the DOJ, because he was so effective at defending Donald Trump's immigration policy in his first term. So he received a promotion during the second term. However, he refused to go along with, for whatever reason, you know, he had a change of heart or something in regards to Kilmar Garcia. He says, quote, "I wouldn't be abiding by my oath if I stayed silent right now." And then he goes on to say that Trump's DOJ wanted him to lie about Kilmar being a gang member and terrorist and then fired him because he wouldn't. 60 Minutes, which is another CBS program, on Instagram said, quote, "We found over 35 cases in which the judges have specifically said that the government is providing false information. It might be intentionally false info, including false sworn declarations, time and again." So a further confirmation that what we're hearing is lies. Lies again and again and again, even under sworn declaration, in statements made under oath, the government is blatantly lying to us. There was quite a bit of upheaval this week when a nominee, it was a Trump nominee, he was going to be leading the Office of Special Counsel. His name is Paul Ingrassia. However, there were basically leaked chat logs by Politico, which showed numerous racist and Nazi statements. This is the second story full of texts and chats leaked by Politico, which showed something similar. The last one was the Young Republicans. This was just over a week ago, in which similarly, that group chat was filled with people messaging each other amongst the Young Republicans leadership regarding wanting to watch people burn, using racial slurs, talking about Hitler and their love of Nazis. Well, in this case, with Paul Ingrassia, I'm just going to read a couple of the things that he said here. MLK Jr. was the 1960s George Floyd, and his holiday should be ended and tossed into the seventh circle of hell where it belongs. Quote, "I do have a Nazi streak in me from time to time, I will admit it. We need competent white men in positions of leadership. The founding fathers were wrong that all men are created equal. We need to reject that part of our heritage." Referring to Vivek Ramaswamy, he said, "Never trust a Chinaman or Indian, never. Blacks behave that way because of their natural state. You can't change them." When other members of the group tried to talk back to him, tried to tell him to stop talking that way, he denied it multiple times, time and time again. "Nah, it's fine. Don't be a boomer. I don't mind being a scumbag from time to time," he replied. At one point, he wrote, "I said we're making Kwanzaa illegal in the next Trump admin. That was the gist of my tweet." Members of the group had finally had enough, some saying, "There are enemies in this group. Please take my name out of this thread." Republicans sure love to get after Democrats for calling them Nazis, and yet time and time again, leaked chats from not just everyday right-wing people. This isn't just like some citizen. These are people, this is a Trump-nominated person to head the Office of Special Counsel. It was the leadership of Young Republicans. And then, of course, we have simply the actions and statements from President Trump himself. and others in upper leadership. Now, Ingracia did step down just a couple of days before the nomination hearing. He did receive kickback from Republicans. And this is maybe perhaps the one positive to take away from this, is that those in the group chat did not go along with him and that they're not blazing forward with this nomination. But gee, I mean, this should be the very bare minimum. It's not heartwarming that it ended that way, but I suppose it could have been a whole lot worse if they had nominated him anyway. All right, the Democratic Senator from Arizona, Adelita Grijalva, still has not been sworn in. And the Arizona AG is suing to force Mike Johnson, Speaker of the House, to make it happen, to seat her. Again, to reiterate, she is the pretty much the only thing stopping the motion to be pushed through to reveal everything known about the Epstein files. The lawsuit, which Mays threatened in a letter to Johnson last week, argues that the speaker's delay is depriving the 813,000 residents living in Arizona's 7th District of congressional representation. Meanwhile, Mike Johnson and Republicans are seating other right-wing seats at the same time, showing that there is no reason that they can't do it for Grijalva. All right, just a couple left here. Yet again, more boats were struck and blown up, more people murdered by the Trump administration in the Caribbean this week under the pretense of drug running. He was asked, do you have legal authority to strike boats? Trump says, we have legal authority. We're allowed to do that. And if we do it by land, we may go back to Congress. This is a national security problem. They killed 300,000 Americans last year. Drugs. No, they didn't. That number is not right. And I am willing to bet everything that I have that if they do decide to strike by land, they will not go through Congress to do it. By the way, the total number of drug deaths in the U.S. in 2024 was 80,391, which happened to be a decrease over the previous year of 27%. Nowhere near the 300,000 that he claimed, and the percentage of those deaths that occurred from drugs coming in specifically from Venezuela is no doubt a microscopic amount comparatively. He also this week threatened Colombia, threatened land strikes and farmers there. I'm not going to speculate on the purpose for this or where it could go. I think suffice it to say that the president of the United States is currently threatening two major South American countries with land invasion. Okay, and lastly, this is in theweek.com, why the White House is behind a rare Supreme Court push to limit gun ownership. It says, as an increasing number of states provide Americans access to legal cannabis, the U.S. Supreme Court is set to debate one of the less obvious but hugely impactful implications of this country's growing legalization movement, gun rights. On Monday, the High Court announced it would hear arguments. In U.S. versus Ali Danielle Hemani, this narcotics-related case could upend firearm access for millions at the request of the Trump administration. It's a rare instance of this White House seeking to limit rather than expand gun ownership. With arguments scheduled for the coming year and ruling expected in June, the case would be a major milestone for two of America's most controversial pastimes. Now, the government has said that state legislatures have long prohibited the possession of arms by drug users and addicts, people with a history of narcotics use, and not just by persons under the influence of drugs. This is something that they are risking changing with this ruling, essentially putting millions of people at risk over technical violations. It is a broadly written law and even jeopardizes people who use marijuana legally with a medical card. It says, while the number of Americans who use marijuana legally under state law and possess a firearm is unknown, there is certainly a significant overlap between the two. What does this do? What does this mean? Essentially, it sets Donald Trump to broaden his ability to remove gun access to the people that he chooses. If you have a registered firearm and you also have a registered marijuana medical card, depending on the outcome of this ruling, they could say you can no longer have guns or you can be tried or prosecuted for owning a gun. And of course, this will be enforced selectively based on people who he considers enemies. Now, no doubt, Second Amendment advocates will have a very large problem with this, and they should, just as they did when Donald Trump threatened to remove gun rights from transgender folk. Because what Second Amendment rights advocates understand, at least in general, is that once those rules are put in place, it won't just stay for that one group. The restrictions will expand. What goes around comes around, and it will no doubt result in people on the right losing access to firearms as well. In 2018, Donald Trump said, take firearms first, due process later. And it's getting to the point where it seems like maybe no due process at all. All right, another scary week here in the United States. Thanks for listening in. Have an enjoyable weekend, and we'll see you on Monday.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure, startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.